Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. This is Dr. Youngblood. You're tuned in to another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues. We're looking forward to this journey together today. In a moment, we're going to introduce our guest, which is the conservative Republican candidate for mayor here in the city of Jacksonville, Jimmy Hill. But right now, let's get into a little brief monologue to build up to where we're going and have our discussion today. But let me remind you, as we face the issues, we do so not based on some denominational dogma or some ideological philosophies, but based on the Word of God. Jesus said to his disciples, "If you continue in my word, then you're my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And then in John 17:17, Jesus made a very declaratory statement when he said, "Thy word is truth." So when we're looking for answers, when we're searching for solution for the issues and the problems that we're faced with in life, let me remind you, the only source to go to is the book of truth. And the Bible does not contain truth. The Bible is just not a little tidbit of truth, but the Bible is in totality truth. And in that being, with that being said, let me remind you that God created the home, he created government, and he created the church, and in that order. And anything that has to do with the home, the church, or the government, may I remind us, the Word of God has the answer. There are many folks today that get a little squeamish when you talk about political things, especially if it's on the pulpit. A lot of you that are listening today, perhaps you've said, "Well, I don't believe preachers should talk about political things. That's for the politicians." Well, that's not what God thought. It's not what God said. And as we look at the Scripture, it gives us direction and insight. And so we have this broadcast each day. We do so based on the authority of Scripture and what does the Word of God say. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to join in this dialogue and discussion today, you can do so by simply dialing 401-1413. 904-401-1413 gets you directly through to our studios and right to the microphones so that we can have this dialogue and discussion together. It's my joy each day for us to do so, and the best way for you to join in this discussion is by dialing 401-1413. We're going to be talking with the candidate for mayor in a moment, Jimmy Hill. We invite you to call in, ask your questions. Love to have you ask the questions to Jimmy today about his intent, what he's wanting to do as leadership in our city when he's elected as mayor, and I'm looking forward to that discussion. But ladies and gentlemen, first of all, let me remind you that we're living in a divided country today. If you don't believe that, just listen to Nancy Pelosi and Chuckie Schumer and see what they have to say about their ideas of a border wall and border security and what they think ought to be done. In fact, I just recently said, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we need to check and find out what company in Silicon Valley is behind paying them to push for drones and some electronic devices to stop the illegals from coming into America. That will not stop anyone from coming across the border, but a wall will, as President Trump used to say, a tall, beautiful wall. May I remind us there's a need for that. But we face that division today in society because we're rapidly destroying our constitutional republic and a representative form of government, and we're leaving what even some of our politicians call a democracy. Ladies and gentlemen, we do not live in a democracy. It's a constitutional republic with a representative form of government. But now we're finding our socialist Democrats are literally leaning to the left, trying to destroy the fundamental foundation of our nation and our constitutional documents that we have operated on now for some 240 plus years, and they're trying to destroy that. Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you, when we look at the Scripture, we understand that God created government to prosecute the evil and to protect the good, and we're finding that turned upside down in the democratic socialist movement that we're finding today in society. In fact, New York State Representative Ocasio-Cortez, I believe they call her Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, I believe is the way they abbreviate for her today. She's wide-eyed and just as ignorant and dumb as a rock when it comes to anything with our Constitution. She's the one that said that we have three branches of Congress. She's the one that's advocating 70% taxes, and she says it's on the rich. She's the one that says everything needs to be free stuff, free medical care, free education, et cetera, from kindergarten through college. And yet when she's asked how do we have the money to pay for that, she, with the same wide-eyed smile, she said the government, of course. The government doesn't make anything. They produce the dollar simply by printing it. But, ladies and gentlemen, we have about 30-plus at this juncture of those socialist Democrats. And, by the way, a socialist is simply a communist light, L-I-T-E, and that's what we're finding pervading our society today, especially in the political realm with those on the left. And that's the Democratic Socialist Party today. We now have elected Muslims in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. And I am surprised to see the left continue to embrace some of these Muslim women that just going into office. In fact, do you realize, ladies and gentlemen, we have a movement now in Washington in the House of Representatives to remove the old statute that goes back to the 1800s that says in the House of Representatives you cannot have a head covering. That means men cannot wear hats or caps and the women cannot wear scarves or hats. And yet they're going to remove that regulation in order to allow these radical Muslim women to wear their hijabs in the House of Representatives in making the bills for America. And one of them, in fact, has just recently used some very vulgar, vile statements about President Trump, and she is advocating for the destruction of Israel. She's advocating for the Muslim Brotherhood. She's advocating for ISIS, and yet we find that she is in the House of Representatives. That's how far down we've gone on the ladder of selecting those that need to go in office to represent us. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we need to understand that we are in the position today in our city and in our state to elect good men for office. And I advocate that on men. I'm not denigrating for women by any stretch of the imagination, but God created men to be the head of the home, the head of the church, the head of government, and to be responsible. We have this mamsy-pamsy idea with some of our ladies in office that if you go to war, you're going to kill people and break things. Well, that's what war is all about. And that's where we need to have the differentiation as to who we need to put in office to lead our nation. And this is the reason I'm advocating today, and especially pushing you to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that on March the 19th, we have the primary election here in Duval County, our election in Jacksonville. And this election on March the 19th, which will be the primary, we're going to determine this election cycle in March and then in May, who goes into office with, I think, almost all of our city council members, several other constitutionally elected offices, including our mayor's office. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know of anything that's any more important than to put good men in office in our city. And I say this very openly and very candidly. Now, you've heard me say this before. I believe with our city council right now in Duval County, we have one of the weakest city councils in general in the almost 40 years that I've been in Jacksonville. I am embarrassed by some of the decisions that they're making and have made, and especially when it comes to the mayor. In a moment, I'll introduce to you and bring to the microphone Jimmy Hill, which is our Republican conservative. And I use the term Republican conservative. He's the Republican conservative that's on the ballot for our mayor's office in the city of Jacksonville. We need to listen up and listen well. Let me remind you again, you're tuned in to Let's Face the Issues. This is Dr. Youngblood. You can join in this discussion and dialogue today by dialing 401-1413, 904-401-1413. The mayor's office is very important in our city. He makes the decision basically as the leader, just as on a national level, our president makes the decision from the executive branch as to the direction of our city. It's important to have good men in city council, but it's just as important, if not more so, to have a good conservative Republican in office in the mayor's seat. With the present mayor that we have, ladies and gentlemen, I've called it, and I don't mind saying it on the air, I've said we've got an empty suit. And that empty suit, I simply mean he has he's the puppet, and the power brokers of about 8 or 10 or 12 people in our city make the decision on the direction of our city and not the mayor in reality. Ladies and gentlemen, the mayor, a number of years ago when we were faced with the HRO, the Human Reprobate Ordinance, some call it the Human Rights Ordinance, simply where the LGBTQ community, the sodomite community, want to have their leadership role in saying what they want and demanding special exceptions. I'm against it. We have a federal constitution and a state constitution. Between those two constitutions, they have every right and every remedy and every protection that any other citizen has in our state. And to say that they need some special rights and some special recognition is an affront to me as a Christian citizen in our city. But the mayor promised, Mayor Lenny Curry promised a group of pastors seated in a room that if that HRO were to be passed, and it was passed 2017, February the 15th. And ladies and gentlemen, we searched for him. We called him. We had, if you please, demonstration of marches out on the square in front of City Hall. We had the media there. We called the mayor's office, and I said then, and I say now, he was hidden in his office someplace, hidden in a closet someplace, we're on a journey someplace, if you want to call it that he did not want to respond to the pastors that wanted to hold him responsible for his commitment. He let that bill, after it was on his desk, he let it stay on his desk until it became law because he refused to do anything about his carrying out his promise. Ladies and gentlemen, after several years of an unsuccessful attempt to get the HRO passed, they finally passed it, and our mayor, by simply being absent, allowed that to become law. I'm bothered by that. Mayor Raimondas, ladies and gentlemen, now he says he's fighting crime, and he's not going to be satisfied until every citizen in Duval County is safe from any crime. But ladies and gentlemen, listen very carefully. I am thankful that we put 160 new officers on the streets for the JSO. But at the same time, what he's not saying is we've lost about 300 officers by attrition. And as a result of that, we still have a major deficit on the number of officers that's needed. You realize, ladies and gentlemen, we have 840 square miles of space for Duval County. You realize, ladies and gentlemen, if you were to place a call now, wherever you are in the city, if you have an accident and somebody's not dying, you'll have 45 minutes to an hour before an officer gets there. Not because they're not interested, but because we're so thinly covered with Jacksonville sheriff's officers across our county. There's a need to be more aggressive in making sure that we're protected. And even though I'm thankful for that 160 officers, it's not nearly enough. We need to understand, ladies and gentlemen, the mayor has the responsibility of protecting our city. The mayor has the responsibility of standing for that which is right and that which ought to be done. But ladies and gentlemen, may I remind us today, we have a guest on Let's Face the Issues, Jimmy Hill. Jimmy is running for mayor. He is the candidate for mayor. He is the Republican conservative candidate. And I emphasize that again. Jimmy, welcome to our microphone today and the opportunity we have to have this dialogue and discussion on Let's Face the Issues. I'm looking forward to what the Lord's going to do in your candidacy. Say a few words to our people. Introduce yourself. Let them know something about you and your passion for this office for mayor.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. It's my pleasure. And I'm excited about getting kind of our message out there. And the message is that Jacksonville can do better. You know, we have two candidates that the media wants to talk a lot about. They focus on two particular candidates, but there's a third candidate. And I'm a son of Jacksonville. And, I can't say I was born here because my dad and mom left Jacksonville, went to Morocco where I was born while my dad was serving in the Navy. So I have to throw that in there. It takes a couple of seconds every time to say it because I can't say born and raised. But native of Jacksonville, just happened to be in Morocco when I was born because of military service, my dad. So there's a huge differential between what we're talking about and what we're getting. And what we're getting is we have two politicians, two people who have decided politics is their path, and they've taken every political move they can. One that was the city council president and one who came out of kind of nowhere to be mayor, had no political background, but has been thrust into a political career because the establishment that you talked about, the money establishment in Jacksonville, kind of picks and chooses the winners of those positions. And they do it so that they can manipulate and control what they get and what they do. And Jacksonville has been plagued by this for many years. The difference is, for the first time in history, because of our president, because of some unique things that are happening in the world, and quite frankly, some of them are very biblical, there's an opportunity for a regular person to come up out of the ranks and run our city from a common sense perspective. And that's what I'm bringing to the table. I have a lifetime of experience. I was a public servant for 28 years. I was a firefighter. And that lowly position, which I'm very proud to have been, it gives you experience in every aspect of every community. I've been in almost every neighborhood at some point, You deal with infrastructure. You deal with all kinds of things from a level that you wouldn't expect. And the whole time I was doing that and in learning, you know, this basic life skills, a lifetime of adult, you know, being an adult and learning about, you know, government in general, I was involved in the government side of it because I was part of a small town department at first. And I learned a lot about government. I attended, you know, thousands of hours of meetings, ironically. And you learn about human nature. And then also during that, I was a businessman. So I'm kind of this mutant. I sit on the side, in the middle, actually, of watching a government, watching it waste money. And then I sit from the perspective of a businessman. The whole time I was running large events, I did the boat show down at Metro Park and that type of thing. So people don't know what I did. I was a professional event producer. And you see this perspective. You see that there's a lot of opportunity. And Jacksonville has been, I'd say, invaded. That's the best word for it. We've been invaded by an external force that's controlling everything downtown. You know, we have this large surge of potential money. But what's interesting, I'm talking about the football complex and the sports complex and some of the bigger businesses, they're controlling. And a good example was Amazon. Amazon was given, when they first wanted to come here, they were given an opportunity to be handed 200 plus acres of waterfront property. That's insane. There's no excuse for that I can find to give away that kind of property. So we're being manipulated by outside sources, and not every one of them are outside. We have some local big hitters that everyone knows about who've controlled politics for years.
What you call power brokers.
Exactly. And so here's the thing. I think it's interesting. I don't want to go to war with the power brokers, and I don't want to be an obstructionist. We've got to fix downtown. We've got some things to fix, but somebody has to keep that system in check. Currently, we don't have that from our council president or our mayor. Neither one of them have taken that role. I did something kind of interesting. I ran for elected office. I ran, and I was a city commissioner in Atlantic Beach. And for some reason, that little city wanted to wrestle with constitutional issues. And I didn't mind doing it because it's pretty easy to look at. There's a document that is really well written. Everybody in the world that paid any attention understands the Constitution of the United States is a nearly perfect, if not completely perfect, document, inspired by God, mm-hmm. written in a way that any person can read it. That document has served me so well. I was able to fight the HRO for 2+ years on that using simple language out of the Constitution. It frustrated the opposition. The people who wanted to inject this terrible law into our community couldn't understand how I was so effectively defeating their argument. And it was because it's in writing. It's an instruction book if you use it that way. None of these politicians, I don't even know if they have a Constitution, but if they'd crack that open and take a look at it, there's a really clear path for the HRO and a lot of these other social issues that the socialist progressive side of the formula are forcing into our community.
You mentioned that about the Constitution. Let me interrupt for just a moment.
Sure, absolutely.
Most are not even aware of the fact that in our schools of law schools, George Washington University, et cetera, an attorney can go through law school all the way through graduation and getting his credentials to practice law without ever opening a Constitution.
It's great.
And I find that egregious, and especially in the United States of America, where we have those going into political office that do not know the Constitution, are not familiar with the Bill of Rights, are not familiar with what our founding fathers gave us, and at the risk of their own futures, but they were willing to do so.
Yep.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
You touched on that about the picking winners and losers.
Yep.
And that comes about as a result of trying to give the keys to the kingdom, as I call it, the keys to the city, the keys to the vault of the taxpayers' money to some of the power brokers. We have that on a recurring basis in DeVol County, and I've seen it for almost 40 years in our city, but I believe it's worse now than at any point in time that I've witnessed it. We have the owners of a football team that basically has been given the keys to the city. Right now, I believe we're on the very cusp of seeing some major things happen in our city with major city properties, major city holdings being transferred to others as a result of these power brokers. And under that umbrella would be also the JEA, the Jacksonville Electric Authority, which is we're about one of the only cities in America that owns our own electrical and utilities companies. What's the benefit of this taxpayers continuing to own it versus it being sold in a backroom negotiation that's been attempted now for the past couple of years?
So it's interesting. That's, you know, obviously it's a major influx of straight cash into our budget. People don't realize this. It pays money directly to our budget. The reason they're talking about selling it is somebody, and this is the part that needs to be talked about, signed a contract to buy power from a third party, and that contract has them in a corner. That's what needs to be addressed, is this bad contract. They're talking about buying it from a Georgia cooperative or something. I don't remember exactly what the third party was, but that's the reason they keep wanting to sell it. Well, there's always another reason. The first problem, the first big indicator of what's wrong, is it has a value of around $6 billion, and they want to sell it for $2 billion. So stop right there and look at that. Why would they do that? There's only one reason. It's to collect immediate usable cash to move somebody politically down the road. That's the only reason. It won't help the taxpayers. It won't have a long-term advantage. But let me give you another reason. This is me personally. I had the privilege to be deployed to post-hurricane disaster areas on a regular basis, and when you'd go to those places, you would think you could send military in and that sort of thing. Well, trust me when I tell you this. You have no security in a community until the electricity is restored post-disaster of any kind. Electricity has become a critical, fundamental part of our government because the way we live as a society. And if you don't have the autonomy to get that up and running, you know, quickly, there's a whole nother piece to this. If you're on FPL's next list and we get one of those coastal raking storms, you get Melbourne, Cocoa, and some of these other communities hit, where are those resources going to go first? They're not going to go straight here, and they're going to be spread thin. I like the fact that we can get our power up and running. We have a workforce that is expert at it. As a matter of fact, Puerto Rico still talks about the JEA. We were able to send people to Puerto Rico to help them after their direct hit. These guys are pros. These ladies and gentlemen that do the JEA, fix the power and the situation with the JEA, they're the best in the world at it. I love having that. As a citizen, that by itself is worthwhile. You'll notice that we are better off grid-wise than most people. I don't know why they're trying to put us into a grid situation as a city. We were once able to stand on our own, and being on the grid right now makes me a little nervous anyway from a national level.
Absolutely. Here's one of the things that I've had an argument with, the opportunity to interview one of our city council members, and his argument was, well, JEA recognizes and our city fathers recognize that right now the future for power is by way of solar. And JEA is not prepared for the solar power as other power companies. Therefore, while we can get the price that is up now, we need to sell it before the price plummets because JEA is not equipped with the solar system. That's the argument from one of our city council members.
All I can say is follow the money. Go find out who owns the land that some of the solar systems sit on that they've already installed. Follow the money, follow the money, follow the money. You'll find out why we're being pushed into a power situation that has its issues. Let me throw one out there. Solar is amazing. When the sun's shining, it's amazing. But solar still has a major battery issue. Batteries are not where everybody thinks they are technology-wise. There's a storage issue. You can only store so much power, and there's an ecological impact to lithium being mined. We're trading one bad thing for possibly another. I'm not anti-solar. I love solar. I think it's a great opportunity. But we're not there yet. And I hate to say it, everybody's rushing to follow this 8-year trend where we'd lost our minds as a nation, and we're chasing all kinds of insanity, the last administration specifically. Take a look at the hard science. All of the solutions being thrown at us, and I don't know where everybody else stands. I personally don't think nuclear is where it is. When you have a plant that still is susceptible to the tsunami and the earthquake that took out the plant in Japan, that today, as we speak, is still just pouring radioactive material into the ocean, and no one talks about it because it's so horrific. And we're going to actually move towards nuclear as our source, even though it's in central Georgia. Do we not like the people in central Georgia? Why are we forcing ourselves back into a technology that doesn't provide us with a perfect solution? Not that coal, not that oil is perfect. It's just we haven't replaced them yet. And everyone's in a hurry. And we shouldn't be in a hurry, especially when it's something like nuclear. And that's just me personally.
So what you're saying is, Jim, if I can intercede for a moment, and then we've got a caller. But what you're literally saying is we need to go back and do a lot of analysis and reanalysis of this before we jump too quickly to sell a wonderful asset that we have in our city, and that is the JEA.
Absolutely. And it's a perfect you said it exactly right. We need to look at it a little bit more before we jump into these other things. I think what really needs to be looked at is the money. The money
follow
is
the money trail, generally speaking.
That is what's wrong with it. We're being led by the dollar, and that's never good.
Let me throw a couple of other scenarios out for you. One of the opponents that you have in this race is the former president of city council, Anna Brochet.
Right.
Anna Brochet when she first went into office, I believe it was 2016, and she campaigned on issues of being an accountant and being able to have a good accounting acumen and being able to do some things in that realm. But she's introduced some things that is a little bit mind-boggling to me. One of the bills that she had bandered about was to remove our historical monuments,
right,
our patriots' right, monuments in Duval County. And she has a pretty good following in that realm. As mayor, what would you do to put a stop to that approach of wanting to destroy history and the heritage of our nation, and in particular what we find in the South and is revealed in our monuments in Duval County?
It's a big issue with me. So I've been involved in the opposition to that idea for a while. I've been going to meetings. I actually kind of jumped right into the progressive meetings where they actually came to my community and had a conversation about removing statues. And they're very organized, but they're not that many of them. And I'll be honest with you, most citizens who would have a dog in that fight, who would have a reason to be tied into it, would much rather see their neighborhood safe, would much rather see that energy put towards stopping crime and intervening with kids before they go into gangs. One of the saddest days of my life is I actually caught a news clip of the Taliban tearing down some antiquities, a major structure. And I looked at that and I thought, humanity has reached a new low. When we would tear down a monument, something that means something to history. And I couldn't think of anything but, when you fail to recognize your history, you're doomed to relive it. There's a version, something that goes really close to that. And I was just sitting there watching the television.
If we don't know history, we're bound to repeat.
Exactly.
History.
And that's precisely what I thought. I was sitting there watching this on the couch, and I thought to myself, we're at the lowest point I've seen us as a species, quite frankly, if we're going to do that. And then I actually see this movement come from the progressive left to start tearing down these monuments that are – there are still relatives in this community of those individuals.
Yes.
who have, feelings and are impacted by that. I do not for one second think that the Civil War was fought for anything but to stop slavery and the economic impact of slavery. I understand all that. That's not the issue. The issue is those monuments aren't about slavery. They're about the sacrifice of men and women who were on a fight. And there is no excuse for taking them down. I am all for, and I've said this, and I think someone actually told me that Ms. Broche had actually gone this direction with her argument, which was kind of funny because I've been going to city council saying this regularly. Use that opportunity. If there's two sides to any story, that monument could share a piece of dirt with a plaque and a message and another monument if we need to the other side of the issue. But do not remove, unless it's a memorial park or something like that, but do not remove the original history. I think a learning opportunity and a teaching opportunity are too valuable. And as long as we're having a conversation about what those monuments stand for, they're doing their job. As long as we as a society never return to that type of thing. But then I redirect the argument. I said, why are these – I call them the T-shirts, these people that are the ralliers, the people that are – why are they not focusing on the slavery that exists on Phillips Highway today in Jacksonville, Florida? There's human slavery right this minute. Why don't we put this energy into to freeing people who are literally enslaved today in Jacksonville through the human trafficking that we know exists, that everyone knows exists? Let's put our energy into that. Let's not try and divide us, which is what that is 100% about, by the way.
That's the attempt of it.
That movement is for one thing and one thing only. That's to segment us up and get us to argue amongst ourselves so that they can divide us, so that they can move their agenda.
Yes.
And it's not about anything but that. Anyone that says it is a liar.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Jimmy Hill, the conservative Republican candidate for mayor in the city of Jacksonville. We've got about a minute left, Jimmy. If you would take this balance of our time, share with our listeners. Give them specifics.
Absolutely.
How they can help you in this race.
So
what they need to do, how they can reach you. You need signs being put out. You
yep.
need additional funding, et cetera. Tell them how to reach you and what the needs are.
Absolutely. So the easiest way to contact me is jimmyforjacksonville.com. That is the website, jimmyhillforjacksonville.com. Got that. jimmyhillforjacksonville.com. That's how you reach us. And if you want to get involved, we need help with finances. Obviously, we're not the rich candidate with the millions of dollars in the bank. We're the grassroots guy who needs the help to get the message out. But this is the most important part. you have to know that we can do it. And the numbers actually say that this is a winnable race. When you look at the groups that are involved, the numbers that vote, we are actually in this race. And a lot of people would pay, you know, look at, listen and say, oh, that's a third candidate. The media is not talking to him. They weren't talking to Donald Trump until he made him. It's really interesting, the parallels to what happened there. The only difference is I don't have the billions of dollars, but he didn't spend his money. All he did was message properly. He didn't have to buy his way into that. He actually used his message. And that's what we're doing differently. We're bringing a common sense approach. If you want to help, we'd love to have the help. We need probably money. I hate that that's a part of the process, but probably money is the main thing right now. And give us a call. Our number's right there on the website if you have any questions and if you get to know us.
For those that may not be pulling it up on the website, give them that telephone number and email address.
Yep, 904-759-2758. We'll reach me directly. And the website is jimmyhillforjacksonville.com, spelled out F-O-R, jimmyhillforjacksonville.com.
Very good. Thank you so much,
ladies
and gentlemen, for joining us today. We've been talking to Jimmy Hill, the conservative Republican candidate for mayor. If you would be kind enough to keep him in prayer and be sure and vote, March the 19th is our primary. We need to put conservative men like this in office. Thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you on the air even tomorrow as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on AM 1600 and 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.